name is Katie. I'm an alcoholic. And I have to say, I'm extremely nervous. I have never spoken in a room so big in my entire sobriety. Couple of things. I'm very conscious of it because I'm going through some precancerous stuff right now on my skin, and that's why I'm looking like I have a really bad sunburn. And it's pretty painful, so from time to time, I just have to kind of, you know, touch my face a little bit. So I'd also like to thank my friend Billy and David for asking me to speak. The only thing they left out is that I'm being recorded. Had I known that, I may have had to have said no. So I'm a little self-conscious of that as well, because I don't like the sound of my voice sometimes. Okay, what I learned a long time ago is to say four words to help me get through this, and it's please God help me. My sobriety date is January 6th of 1998. And my home group is the Hopeful Group in Largo over in Pinellas County. So for me to be across the bridge at 8 o'clock on a Thursday night is a very big deal because I'm usually in bed by 9. And the other awareness that I had, which I can't even believe I'm going to say this, you know, being in a young people's group, you know, I look around and I see a lot of real biologically young people, and it's bringing me back to when I first got sober. I look a lot younger than I am, and I'm now up here, and I used to be there like the 20-year-old in AA looking at the 40-year-old saying, my God, you know, how did they get there? And now I'm the one talking to you, and it just kind of, I have a sense of gratitude about that, that it's really, it's just, it's bringing me back to my early days, and seeing young people together, that's what really carried me through, and still does. It still does. And I know, I think your expression is you just have to be young at heart to be here or something. So I'm definitely that, I can say. So what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I grew up in Forest Hills, New York, which is about 20 minutes outside of New York City. And my story is very similar to many in that I grew up in an alcoholic home. My father is one of five boys, and all five of them are alcoholic. My father is the only one that has had any type of sobriety. So I am the youngest of six, and I have five older brothers myself. So, yes, I will answer your question. I was a brat. I was spoiled, and I still am a little bit. Well, not a brat, but I still am a little bit spoiled sometimes. So growing up, my dad got sober when I was a year and a half, and my mom went to Al-Anon when I was 9 months old. So I grew up not only with active alcoholism, but I grew up with recovery as well. The big book was on my dining room or my living room table, but I didn't know what it was. And when I'd say, where's daddy going? Oh, he's going to a meeting. Where's mommy going? She's going to a meeting. But no one really explained what that was. And my brothers were 6 to 12 years older than me, so there's a real significant age gap. So in the fact that I was kind of a brat, you know, I wanted things my way. I had my own room. So I was very kind of self-centered and selfish from a very, very young age. And my youngest brother, I didn't know this till many years ago, that it was factual, but growing up, I always felt he resented me because he was 6 years older. And when I came along, I was, you know, the baby. I was daddy's little girl. And he got in trouble for everything that I did. And all of the attention went from him to me. So growing up, I always felt there was just something not okay or that I wasn't meant to be there. And, you know, big brothers, you know, would pick on me. And, you know, where we grew up, we used to go visit my grandmother. And we would drive and we'd drive all these abandoned buildings. And my brothers would say, oh, yeah, we found you in the garbage can up on the roof. And, you know, just the little stuff you do to your 6 and 7 year old sister. But I tell you, I was very sensitive at that point, and I took it literal. And oh, you were adopted, and no one wanted you. And so, you know, I used that for a long time as my excuse. You know, that it was their fault, and they screwed me up. And you know, so from a very young age, again, the typical that a lot of us say is, I just felt different. I didn't feel like I belonged. I never felt good about myself from a very, very young age. And I grew up with a lot of their active addiction. You know, I lived with their hangovers. I saw them wrapped in blankets coming up out of the basement and grunting at me. And it was like, what is wrong with everybody? Like, and I lived in the household where it was more silence than it was screaming and hollering. You know, I didn't live in that type of household. I live in silence, where the pink elephant was in the middle of the living room and everybody saw it, but nobody talked about it. I remember my one brother attempted suicide when I was 12, and it was never talked about. It was just, oh, your brother, to this day, I don't even know, I mean, I know what happened, but at that time, I don't even know what my parents told me. I just know I was told something happened. So it was either that or, you know, even though my dad was sober, he still had, you know, rages from time to time. And, you know, I remember growing up, my mother would always say, whatever you do, don't marry a man that drinks. Okay, well, I didn't know what that meant. And it took me years to realize she was talking about my dad. So that's kind of like my beginning. And for a long time, I didn't drink because I knew my brothers were alcoholics and they got in trouble and they went to jail and they wrecked cars. And I saw what it did to my parents. So I thought, well, you know, I'll be the good one. And that's kind of what I did. I was a perfectionist for a long time. I excelled at school. I tried to, and no one ever put that pressure on me. I put that on myself. I just wanted to just be better than they were because my parents were, you could just see what it was doing to them. And eventually I hit the age of, you know, the miraculous teenage years of 15 and 16 and thought, well, you know, well, my mom's not an alcoholic, and my dad is, and my brothers are, so I'll be like my mom and won't be. You know, that was like my justification. And God's honest truth for me, from the very first drink, all bets were off. I never had a social drink in my life that I can recall. From the moment I picked up alcohol, it did something for me that nothing had done up until that point. I was a very skinny, scrawny, just self-conscious child, and I didn't have good self-esteem. And the minute I had alcohol, that all changed. I just was able to be somebody that I thought I wanted to be. I was able to act in ways, you know, I was very shy and introverted around boys. And, you know, when I drank, I wasn't, you know, this part of me just came out that I was like, wow, this is the answer. This is what I've been looking for. And I drank alcoholically the entire time that I drank. I loved what alcohol did for me. I don't love what it did to me, but I loved what it did for me. It gave me that ability to be somebody else because I absolutely hated to be in my own skin. I just wanted to be somebody else, somewhere else. And by the time I started drinking, you know, my brothers owned, this was perfect for an alcoholic. My one brother opened up a bar. And my other brothers bartended at it, and I cocktail waitressed, and, you know, I would drink on the job. But I was Timmy's little sister, so nobody would talk to me. If anybody even approached me inappropriately, my brother would jump over the side of the bar. And, you know, it was just a very tough way to live internally. So for a long time, you know, that kind of behavior went on. I drank once in a while. I would consider myself a lightweight from the very beginning. It did not take a lot for me. But once I started, I did not have the ability to stop. I was a blackout drinker almost instantaneously. I often share that when I think of myself drinking, I like to see myself like in a white flowing gown with a beautiful hat, like with a glass of wine, and I'm walking down a field. You know, that's how I envisioned. It is not how I drank. I was sloppy. I vomited more frequently than not. I had bruises on my legs and my arms because I tripped and I fell. My makeup was all over my face. I just wasn't a graceful lady when I drank. I just wasn't. I drank as hard as I can, as fast as I can, and as often as I can. And my alcoholism progressed very, very quickly. And I think what kept me going for a long time is I didn't really have consequences. My friends didn't leave me. My family was still intact. I was in college. I was getting A's and B's. I had a relationship. I didn't have a job yet because I was in school. I wasn't driving because I lived in New York City. I really didn't need a car. And so I didn't have a lot of external consequences, like a lot of people talk about. But I had the internal stuff. I was just in a tremendous amount of pain, you know. And for a lot of people that come up here, they talk about alcoholism and other substances. Well, I don't have that experience. I am 100% true alcoholic. I never did another substance in my life. But I picked up relationships. That was my other substance. From the time I picked up alcohol until the time, well, even after I put it down, I used relationships as a way to escape. Because if I was with you, then I was okay. And if you liked me, then I was okay. And I defined myself through my relationships. And I was in a significant relationship for 6 years. And God bless him for putting up with me, because I was crazy. I really was crazy. And it just helped me not focus on myself. It helped me look outside of me to fix what was not okay on the inside. And I started going to therapy at 18. And my brother's fiance at the time was starting to go to Al-Anon. And I was, I think I was 19, actually. And I don't know how, either she asked me to go or I decided to go. And I went to an Al-Anon meeting, and I specifically remember going because I wanted to figure out what the hell was wrong with my family. Like, I wanted to figure out what was wrong with them. I had no idea it was going to force me to look at myself. I had no concept of what it really was. But I do remember sitting in her car in the front of my house, and I can see it like I can see you. I looked over and I said, "Lori, do you think I'm an alcoholic?" And she said, because she was in recovery herself, and she said what any good alcoholic would say. She said, "Katie, I can't decide that for you." But from the time from 15 to 19, I'd already started questioning my drinking, because I drank differently than my friends. You know, they could drink and put it down and have fun. I drank, I blacked out, I passed out, I said things I shouldn't have said, I behaved in ways I didn't want to behave. And then I picked up the phone the next day and said, "I don't know what I did last night, but I'm sorry, that's not me, that's me drunk." You know, I always had, I knew that what I was doing is not what I wanted to be doing. So from 19 till I was 21, I continued to drink. And eventually I went away to college. I stayed home my first 2 years and I went away. And that's when it got really out of control. Because I was 3 hours away from home. I wasn't Peter and Kitty's daughter. I wasn't, you know, the five brothers' little sister. No one was watching me. And it was just a free-for-all. And it was, you know, no responsibility and nobody watching. And my alcoholism got out of control really, really quick. And what time do I have till? What time does it end? Sorry. 8:40? Thank you. Wow. Oh, my God. So anyway, I'm in upstate New York, which is very different from where I grew up. It's like the mountains. I don't, you know, think I'd ever seen a mountain before that. And just a lot of freedom. And I think it was my second semester. No, it was my second year of being away at school. My alcoholism, I was just getting out of control. My dad had called. My dad never called. It was always my mom. And then I talked to mom and she'd say, "Here's dad." So the minute my dad called, I was like, "Oh, something's not right. Something's going on." He said, "Do you have any exams coming up anytime soon?" I was like, "Yes, I have midterms." He says, "Oh, you know, we'll talk after you." I'm like, "Dad, you can't like not tell me what's going on." And he says, "Your mother and I sold the house and we're moving to Florida." Now, I'm 21 at the time, and what this 21-year-old alcoholic heard was, "We're abandoning you and we're leaving the state, and you're not coming with us." That's what I heard. So from November of 1992 until April of 1993, I went on a rampage, absolute rampage. I could not. This is the house I grew up in. This is the house that my parents lived in for 35 years. It was my aunt's house before that, and all of my brothers had obviously moved out by then because they're so much older than me. And I just used it as an excuse to just get good and drunk. And by the end of that time period, some of the people I drank with in college were drinking like I was. Because if you drank like me, I hung out with you at this point, you know, because the focus was not strictly on me. And they started pointing things out, you know, we just kind of noticed. And I was one of those emotional drunks, you know, that I'd be like sobbing in the bar, leaning up against the wall, like, oh my God, you know, I was one of those, well, I can be dramatic now, but I was very dramatic when I drank. And I just can remember people just pointing out my drinking habits and, you know, you're drinking more and what's going on. And I would sob and I would cry and my family's leaving. And so simultaneously, I was starting to do some community service in my profession to see if it's what I wanted to do. And I had 15 pages of locations and agencies I could have gone to. And where did I wind up? At the mandated outpatient treatment facility for recovering alcoholics and addicts. Out of anywhere I could have gone, that's the place that I chose to go. Because, again, I wanted to figure out why my family was so screwed up. So that was in January of 93 I started going there. And I'd go hungover. I'd be hungover when I go, and I'd be co-facilitating groups, and the clients would be crying, and I'd be crying, and I thought it's because these poor slobs, these poor drunks. I had no idea I was identifying. I had, and you're not supposed to, as a co-facilitator, cry. I mean, it's one thing to well up, but I'm like, they're passing me tissues, so the boundary was crossed pretty early on. I no longer do that, so I've learned to leave my stuff outside the room. But so in the process of that, I started to have some of those realizations, and being the good Catholic Irish alcoholic that I am, Lent was coming. So I had to give up alcohol. That was what I was going to give up for 40 days and 40 nights. So, you know, mom and dad are getting ready to move, and I'm doing this, you know, this community service. And then I start to go see a counselor on the campus of my college. And long story short, he said, you need to go to treatment. I was like, thank you very much. See you later. I was like, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. And I called my dad because, you know, daddy made everything better. And I said, Dad, this guy told me I need to go to treatment. And and being daddy's little girl, my dad never saw me drunk. You know, he either didn't want to see it or I hid it really well. And he's like, you don't need to go. You're not an alcoholic. But if you were, you know where to go. Because by this point, I think two of my other brothers had gotten sober at this point. So there was definitely some, you know, sobriety in my family. And I said, well, you know, if I need to go. So eventually I spoke to one of the counselors where I was doing the community service. And I said, you know, I think I might be. And long story short, I went to my very first meeting. And the only thing I remember about it is I sat in the very back of the room and then realized, well, that's probably where all the new people sit. Not that that's what you're all doing back there, but that's what I thought. And so then I moved up to a different seat, and I remember the gentleman that was chairing the meeting. And I do remember putting my hand up saying that I was new. I don't know. God must have given me the courage to do that, because I didn't do that on my own. And then some women approached me afterwards, and I lied and said I wanted to go to coffee, and I said I had to leave and go back to school. And that was during the Lent period. I didn't go back for 2 months. And in April of 1993, April 26th of 93, I had what I thought was going to, well, not at the time, but it's when I first got sober. And I started going to meetings a week before my 22nd birthday. And I was living on a college campus with people drank that like I did. And I wanted to come out of my skin. I absolutely wanted to come out of my skin. And the only time I can get away from the insanity was when I went to meetings. And it was very difficult place to be. And I was living with a bunch of girls that told me they thought I was being dramatic, that I wanted attention, and you know, I only think I have a problem. Meanwhile, they probably qualified to be here too. And I just think that, you know, it was hard for them to see me what I was going through. And from the very first time I started coming, like at that end of April and May of 93, I walked into the rooms and I felt like I did the very first time I drank. I felt that sense of ease, and I felt the comfort, and I felt safe. Not everybody has that experience, but I did. And when I heard people speaking, it was like, oh my God, like these people are saying what I feel and what I think, because I did not know how to feel. I mean, that was, for me, that was what my alcoholism is about, is just the absolute inability and discomfort with being in my own skin and wanting to feel anything. But to be in a place where I felt like you all understood me better than anybody was just a really amazing feeling. And I started going. You know, I was living with these girls from college, and eventually I met someone in AA, and she was relatively new, and I was new, and we got an apartment together, and I hung out with young people, you know, and then we had a lot of the old-timers that we hung out with. And where I got sober in upstate New York, in Albany, was, I went to the same meetings every night. You know, I went to the Monday night, 8 o'clock. I went to the Tuesday. My home group was the Tuesday, 8:30. The Wednesday night, Holy Cross. I mean, we had the circuit. We called it the circuit. And it was all on these two main roads. And I just latched on really quick. The only thing I didn't do, and I don't suggest this to anybody, is I didn't get a sponsor right away, because I'm sure many women can identify, but I was very intimidated by women. Because if you were pretty, I didn't like you. Because I was insecure, but I didn't know that then. You know, if you were successful or smart, I just was intimidated, and I just didn't know how to be around women and be comfortable. I wasn't comfortable around anybody, but I had a very hard time reaching out to a sponsor. So I called my dad a lot. By then, they had moved here to Florida, and he was of great support, but certainly I wouldn't, looking back, I would have done it differently had I had the courage. But I met my best friend in AA, and my life didn't stop like I thought it was going to. I was 22 years old, and it was like, what am I going to do? And, it's 10 o'clock at night, and I'm sitting in a meeting, and I should be here, and I should be there. And the gentleman that spoke, thank you for your story. I worked in a restaurant, too, and I was 2 months sober, and I was waitressing in a restaurant. I wouldn't recommend that either. But I was in college, and I had to find something that worked. But I remember telling my bosses that I wouldn't cocktail waitress, and they said, why? And I remember telling them, I'm an alcoholic, and I can't. But I'll never forget the one time I spilt the beer all over my hands, and I was, like, shaking, scrubbing my hands in the sink, dying to just lick my fingers. But such an overwhelming feeling. And today, if that were to happen, I'm in a very different place. Not to say that that couldn't happen again, but being early on, eventually I got out of that as well. So one of the things that where I got sober is that was very, very, very strongly recommended and drilled into being a newcomer is no relationships for the first year. Drilled into my head. Well, I was 22. And that didn't apply to me because I just thought I knew better. That may work for you, but that's not how it's going to work for me. Because I had the inability to be alone. I just didn't know how to be alone. So not that I'm proud to say it, but it's part of my story. I was 2.5 years sober, and I was at a convention, the AA convention, and I met him. And he was not 2.5 years sober. I think he was 4 months sober. But caught my eye, and I remember calling my... By this time, I had had a sponsor. At 2.5 years, I had finally asked Catherine to be my sponsor, and she's still my sponsor today. And her big thing was no relationships. Okay, well, I'm different, and we're just friends, Catherine. We're just friends. Well, a year later, I'm engaged, or a year, and I don't even know. A year, and I was 26, and it's a year and a half later. And and I thought everything was going to be great, and I thought everything was going to be wonderful, and I'm finally going to have my fairy tale, and everything's going to be great. And my sobriety was very different than his. And being in a relationship with someone in sobriety for this alcoholic didn't work because I was more focused on, does he have a sponsor? Does he have guy friends? Is he going to meetings? And he wasn't doing any of that. He wasn't working his program the way I thought he was or the way he should have been. And that's not a healthy place for me to be because I became consumed with him. And I was worried that he was going to drink because he wasn't doing it the way I thought he should because I was still very sick at that time. And to be honest, looking back, and my sponsor always encourages me to share this part of my story because it's so important. Becoming consumed with him took the focus off me because I was still in a place where I didn't really want to look at a lot of things. Eventually getting engaged and being in this relationship that really, I was in no place and I had no business being in a relationship at 2.5 years sober the way I was living my life. I was being selfish and self-absorbed to think that I